You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight at 7, it's the Moth Radio Hour. Tonight, a call to a hotline, a rabbi caught speeding, and an obsession with flamenco. That's all tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, from the Midwest to the Deep South, communities and families are mourning the deaths of two black men who were shot by police this week. 37-year-old Alton Sterling was shot on Tuesday morning in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and yesterday evening, Philando Castile was shot dead by a police officer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota.
In Baton Rouge, Sterling was shot outside of a convenience store where he was selling CDs. Police came to the scene after reports of a man carrying a gun threatening others. The owner of the store said he was a friend of Sterling's. In a CNN interview, he alleged that Sterling was shot 6 times, even though Sterling did not attempt to reach for his firearm.
First, they shot 3 times while they were still on top of him. And they jumped off of him and screamed at him, "Get on the ground," which he was already on the ground and shot at the time. And then they released another 3 shots at him.
And outside Minneapolis, where Philando Castile was shot, Castile was pulled over with his fiancée, Diamond Reynolds, in the passenger seat and her 4-year-old daughter in the back. In a Facebook Live video, Castile's fiancée narrated that they had been pulled over for a broken taillight. According to the video, Castile told the officers he was armed and had a concealed carry permit, but that he was reaching for his wallet to get his license and registration.
Here's a clip from the video after Castile was shot by the officer. The next 28 seconds of audio have sensitive content and may be disturbing for some listeners.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand open.
Please don't tell me this, Lord. Please, Jesus, don't tell me that he's gone. Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him. You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
There's been public outcry across the country as the videos of both Sterling and Castile have circulated the internet. And it's not the first time that we've seen social media and technology being used to draw attention to police use of force and police-involved shootings. Joining us now is Ethan Zuckerman. He's director at the Center for Civic Media at MIT and associate professor of the practice in media arts and sciences. Ethan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, and sorry it's on such a horrific topic.
Well, we're glad to have you with us. What's behind this growing trend, would you say, of using social media and technology to broadcast uses of force by police?
Well, I think we're seeing 2 trends, one of which is new, one of which is a little older. The older one is the idea that almost everyone is carrying tools with which they can document. And if you think about this, this really goes back to the Rodney King beating and the circumstance of a motorist having a video camera in their car and being able to document that violence. Now that everyone has video cameras on their mobile phones, we've gotten very used to this idea that people can pull out a camera and document. So that's a bit of an older trend. The newer trend is the idea that people can very quickly find an audience for this video. It was very, very interesting that Diamond Reynolds ended up broadcasting the immediate aftermath of the shooting of Philando Castile to Facebook Live. So her Facebook followers and then a much larger group of people were able to watch in real time as she was broadcasting what was going on. And even when the police forced her to throw down her phone and all we could hear was her voice with the phone pointed at the sky, it was extremely powerful documentation of what was, to me at least, quite clearly excessive use of force. So it's not just this ability to document that we're all carrying with us. It's now this new ability for that documentation to find an audience and to find it very quickly.
And in the Alton Sterling case in Baton Rouge, how was that recorded? How did that come to be recorded and disseminated?
Well, it's interesting to think about with Alton Sterling because there appear to be 2 videos. One is video by a bystander who saw the altercation taking place, pulled out a mobile phone, turned away during the actual shooting, probably fearing for her own safety. But we have a picture of the altercation taking place. We see the context. We hear the shots. There's also video taken by the surveillance cameras in the convenience store. And interestingly enough, the police in Baton Rouge have seized that video, and that has not been released. And because there is still some dispute about whether Sterling was armed or not, there's open questions about when that video will be released. But it's interesting to think about. We now have cameras that we're all carrying in our hands. We have surveillance cameras, often which are backed up to the internet or stored and have some permanency. And we also have police body cams. The police responsible for Castile's death were wearing body cameras. What's interesting is that the body camera alone doesn't necessarily give us an accurate account. They weren't wearing the body cameras correctly. They weren't worn on the person. They were dangling off their bodies, and evidently the footage may not be usable.
And it's interesting because that almost brings it into a difference in witness testimony or witness accounts. What one camera from one angle might capture, what a different camera from a different angle captures, neither one of them is going to be a 360-degree view on what's happening.
One major newspaper did a very interesting demonstration of some of the problems with police body cameras, which is because they are body-worn, because they move as the body moves, they can make things actually look quite different than would be photographed from another perspective. They showed a video shot with body camera that looks like someone assaulting a police officer, and then shot in a wide-angle lens, you see that the person and the police officer are dancing. But the same movements, you know, end up looking very violent when it's held on the body. I think we expect video evidence to be definitive. I think we expect it to answer our questions. In fairness, sometimes it does. If you think back to the case of Walter Scott, that was the motorist who was shot in North Charleston by Michael Slager. And we were lucky enough that Fadine Santana, a Dominican immigrant, happened to be passing by with a mobile phone. He caught footage of Slager shooting Scott as he was running away and then planting a gun on his body. And the North Charleston police responded by firing him and supporting his indictment, and he's now facing trial. But it doesn't always work that way. We remember with Eric Garner in Staten Island, there was video evidence. Many people thought, I thought, that the video evidence was quite ambiguous as far as overuse of force. But a Richmond County grand jury did not indict the officer. In fact, ironically, the only person arrested in the death of Eric Garner was Ramsey Orta, the person who took the footage. Mm-hmm. He became the subject of police scrutiny, and he was arrested on an unrelated weapons charge. And in an ironic moment, he was actually taken to New York State prison today.
And so we're looking at this relatively new dynamic of basically, in any public place, there's going to be someone who has a phone, who has a camera, who can record an event, but not only record an event, now share it in real time or very shortly after. Do you think that this is affecting how the more traditional mainstream media is covering these instances as well?
I absolutely think so. And I think in many ways, the turning point was in Ferguson, Missouri. And after the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, we saw an enormous number of people take to Twitter and to Facebook to not only talk about the horror of this death, but to demand that networks like CNN provide coverage to it. In the communication studies world, we call this agenda setting. Who gets to decide what's going to be news? Who gets to decide whether someone's death is newsworthy or not? Social media is now making it possible for groups like the Black Lives Matter movement to say that we're going to pay attention to Philando Castile. In the case of Philando Castile, you had this footage on Facebook circulating, going viral, well before newspapers sort of knew what was going on and knew what to do with it. And that's a very interesting shift. Basically, because Diamond Reynolds was able to get that document out there, there was a much higher chance that people were going to pay attention to this. You know, by contrast, Trayvon Martin, which ended up becoming a massive story, no one really talked about Trayvon's death for about a week after it happened until the family actually hired a PR agent to try to get people to pay attention to it. Right now, Facebook, social media, is acting as that PR agent.
We're talking with Ethan Zuckerman. He's the director at the Center for Civic Media at MIT, and we are talking about the impact of social media and ready access to technology on these instances of police violence. And Ethan, we talked about how this access and ready access and ready audiences for this kind of coverage is changing the traditional media. How is it impacting public officials and politicians?
Well, I think that the existence of these videos increases the chances that police departments will investigate these matters, and in particular that they'll turn over investigation of these matters to federal authorities, usually the FBI. I think what it does is ensures that these deaths don't happen without notice. My lab is doing a study right now. We're trying to look at media coverage to all deaths of unarmed people of color at the hands of the police from 2014 to 2016. And what we're finding in this is that the vast majority of deaths aren't like Philando Castile or Alton Sterling. We just don't hear about them. They might get two or three stories in local newspapers, but they never become national issues. And when there is no sort of national visibility to a story, there's not as much pressure on local law enforcement, local government to follow up on these things. When these stories become part of a national agenda, when people like you and I are getting on the radio and talking about them, that puts an enormous amount of scrutiny on local police departments and local governments to make some changes and to get things right. So I think this is a way in which activists are using the media well and correctly and using it as a way to get local accountability.
We're talking now about how technology and social media are being used to document police-involved shootings and forceful arrests and how it's impacting the way the public responds.
And we want to hear from you on this. Did you watch citizen videos of forceful arrests or police-involved shootings on social media, from Freddie Gray to Wisconsin's Janelle Lair to Alton Sterling and Philando Castile? Tell us if you think that sharing these videos is impacting things like police accountability. Call us at 800-642-1233. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you think this is making law enforcement stronger? And do you think people are better protected when they're able to record police officers? Call us at 800-642-1234.
We'll continue this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation now with Ethan Zuckerman, director at the Center for Civic Media at MIT. And we're talking about the recent police-involved shootings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile outside of Minneapolis.
And we'd love to hear your take on this. Tell us how you think seeing these videos of forceful arrests or police-involved shootings are impacting your view of the police and the people that they arrest. Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you think that there is extra scrutiny on the police now, and is it justified? Call at 800-642-1234. You can let us know if you think officers should be wearing body cameras or if citizens should be allowed to record them. The number 800-642-1234.
And Ethan, do you have statistics? Are there statistics on how many instances of police violence are recorded and shared in any given year?
So amazingly enough, there are no national statistics. This is one of these peculiarities of how law enforcement runs in the United States. Much like our public schools, law enforcement is really on a town-by-town, even a village-by-village basis. And there are not strong reporting requirements that would give us the ability to track so-called officer-involved shootings. People are starting to object to that term because it puts things in the passive voice, situations where police shoot civilians. So the best we have in some ways is a data set that's being put together by the Washington Post and by The Guardian. Each of them are tracking shootings and other killings of civilians at the hands of the police. There's also a data set put together by a number of the Black Lives Matter movement for 2014, looking specifically at unarmed black people killed by police. So it's very hard for us to look at this and say, this has been a particularly bad year or a particularly bad couple of years for police shooting civilians. My sense is that these years are not unusual. And my sense is that what's happening is that we're just now starting to pay attention to a very serious pattern. It's a pattern that has a lot to do with endemic racism. It's a pattern that has to do with militarization of the police. It's a pattern that has to do with U.S. gun culture. It is very, very difficult for law enforcement officers to know that there's a very good chance that the person they are confronting may well be armed. But those three factors, racism, the prevalence of guns, and police training are combining in a really toxic way at this moment in time.
Let's go to the phones, and Frank in Madison is up. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yes, I believe that the videos do encourage people to actually stand up and speak out. I just left a community meeting at the Boys and Girls Club on Genuine, and Police Covo was there, the DA Ozami was there, and a couple other UW police chief, she was there, and there was a few other police officers. And it actually, the situation in Louisiana and also Minnesota, it has energized a lot of us here in Madison. We're coming on the heels of Janelle Laird, Tony Robinson, and a lot of other people getting beat, killed, and it is frustrating us here in Madison. And a lot of us in the community are just willing to stand up. A new coalition has been formed. I am part of that coalition, and we are actually tired, and a lot of it has to do with people filming these incidences. And I truly believe, not a doubt in my mind, that if the case with Janelle Laird wasn't actually videotaped on the phone, I think she would still have to be, she would still be enduring the justice system, and I think it is horrible. It is totally horrible and frustrating me.
Thank you so much for that call, Frank. So, Nathan, Frank's saying that these videos can galvanize a community and might actually lead to some safety and accountability as well.
I think that's absolutely right. I think what Frank is talking about is that when people see these videos, they're such powerful imagery. Looking at Diamond Reynolds' video posted yesterday, you can see very, very clearly that she's interacting with amazing restraint, amazing politeness to the officers who have just killed her boyfriend. So you can see just how out of control the police officers are. You can see, by contrast, how she's behaving. And it's very, very hard to watch a video like this and not have a realization that something truly awful is going on. I think that this is helping people who didn't understand just how dangerous and terrifying it can be for people of color to be confronted by police and to be confronted by this level of hostility. People have observed that many people of color have not been shocked by these videos. This is, in fact, something that they've learned to fear and, unfortunately, in some cases, expect. White people, like me, in many cases, are incredibly shocked when we see this and we see what just seems to be behavior that's entirely out of hand. And unfortunately, this behavior happens, and it's behavior that people of color in America are facing every day. So I think it's fantastic that it's turning into mobilization, that it's turning into community action in Madison. And I think it's fantastic that people's response to the situation with Janelle Laird has been to try to ask law enforcement to reconsider their tactics and figure out how to police the community in a more respectful fashion.
So there has also been a response to many of these videos being circulated that seem to show police using excessive force to stand up for police and Blue Lives Matter kind of movement. Where are we seeing that kind of response?
Well, it is really interesting that we have in many cases seen crowdfunding campaigns to pay for the defense of police officers who are accused of murder in these cases. And in many cases, we've actually seen more money raised online for the officers than have been raised for victims' families. And that does suggest that there's a strong group of people who want to point out that it is incredibly difficult to be involved with law enforcement, as I pointed out, in a country that has as serious a problem with guns as ours does. It is a very dangerous and very scary job. But I do think that the law enforcement community in some cases is closing ranks in a way that isn't helpful. When Walter Scott was shot by Michael Slager, it's really hard for anyone to say that Slager behaved appropriately. He shot a man as he was running away and then attempted to plant a gun on his body. It would be really good if we could have a law enforcement community stand up and say, this is unreasonable behavior, we're not going to defend it. And in the case of Philando Castile, I would really like to hear from members of the law enforcement community why this was a reasonable use of force, because from what we're able to see, it really doesn't appear to be so.
Well, Ethan, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. And again, sorry it's on such a sad occasion.
That was Ethan Zuckerman. He's the director at the Center for Civic Media at MIT and an associate professor of the practice in media arts and sciences. He joined us to talk about how technology and social media are impacting public awareness and response to police-involved shootings, particularly of African Americans.